Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman, post-trade deadline edition. We're recording this slightly before 5 p.m. local time, so the deadline has been passed for a couple of hours. We were waiting to see if there were any buyouts on the move, potentially, and it looks like we're going to have to wait a bit for that. The Suns did not do anything, which did not surprise me. Kevin, did it surprise you?
It did not, sir. I was prepared for this moment, but some people were not, apparently.
Yeah, let's get into that. I don't really know how to prepare listeners for this episode, I guess, and what we're going to be talking about, because I think we're going to be centralized, but also kind of all over the place, because I think there's like a – I want to get into what I wrote about last week, which was looking at playoff inexperience and how teams have had success in the playoffs with guys that young and inexperienced in the postseason. And just where the expectations are for the team, because it feels like they're kind of all over the place. And I think where this started is there was, at least on my timeline on Twitter, and then something that was talked about on the shows with this team at the start of like last week, I want to say, and I'm not calling it this to just say that it's nonsense or whatever, but there was a narrative that was established that the Suns have a championship window right now. To be honest, Kevin, I don't really understand where that came from. I guess it's because they're top five in the NBA, which, duh, I guess that's where it came from. But it's just the amount of success that they've had against good teams in the regular season, the way they've been playing all season. I guess I'm kind of answering my own question. At the same time, when I was watching this team, especially in the past month to 6 weeks, me personally, and this is a conversation that just goes a lot into expectations and where you see the team, I just never saw this team and said like, ooh, they have an opportunity to win the championship this year. And I think people are saying maybe they're a move away from being there, but this team is not constructed to be a move away. They don't really have movable pieces. A team I want to bring up, Kevin, to kind of start the conversation and kind of give an idea of where we're going with this. The Utah Jazz didn't do anything, Kevin. They got Matt Thomas, and that was it. That's because they're paying Mike Conley $34 million, Rudy Gobert $27 million, Bojan Bogdanovic $17 million, Jordan Clarkson $11 million, Joe Ingles $11 million, Derek Favors $9.2 million, Royce O'Neal $8.5 million, Donovan Mitchell $5 million, and then everyone else is making under $2 million on that team. All of those guys that I just rattled off are key parts of what they do, and the odds of them getting someone who fit in their system and that was better than those guys in their system, it just didn't make sense. So they didn't really have a move to make. And they're a team like the Suns. And you could argue with the success that they've had, I'm not saying this, but with the success that they've had top of the West, that they have even better title odds. I think the national consensus would agree they have better title odds than the Suns right now. I think you could argue that they're in a position where they should be making more win now moves, but you've got to have a move to make. You can't just hypothetically say, the Suns should be doing everything they can. It's like, what should they actually be doing? And the Suns are in the same situation where they only had five players making at least $5 million, and all five of these players are key pieces. Now, could they have moved Jalen Smith and like a future first and something to get like someone who could have helped off the bench? Yeah, but do I think that an eighth, ninth, or tenth man on this team, Kevin, is going to be the reason they beat the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals? No, I don't. So to kind of end my part on it, Kevin, I was just kind of confused with where the state of the expectations were with the team. And I clearly wasn't aligned with where at least a good portion of people seem to be with the team right now.
I think it's fair to say there are windows about chasing championships. But the window I think here is maybe limited because of Chris Paul, right? He's he's older, he's under the contract for one more year. So I think the window you could say is the next 2 years. You don't know how the Lakers are going to come out in the playoffs, whether they're going to be healthy, that kind of thing. You don't know what other teams are going to do to change that window. And we can talk about the trade deadline. Denver made some big moves, but that's about it. Portland, I guess, made a big move. But to me, it's really, like you said, where do people think that a move is going to come from? Dan Bickley has said, okay, they need to consider trading DeAndre Ayton. That's easy to say. It's not easy to do, because you go out and you look for trades for DeAndre Ayton and people know it. Then suddenly they say, why are you trying to trade the number one pick? That means he's not very good. That tanks his value. We don't have to go over. He's an important piece in this team that has a really good record right now. You go down the line. Who do you trade? Devin Booker? No. Mikal Bridges? No. Jay Crowder, you've said maybe, and I think you kind of look at it like, but he's like one of the vocal leaders. You go Cam Johnson, probably not, unless you got a shooter like him back. Frank Kaminsky, he's more valuable to the Suns than anyone else. And guys like Nader, and down the line, you could say like every player on this team, pretty much, like Campaign, Nader, Dario, all these guys are more important on the Suns than you can imagine them on any other team. So I just think trading and finding fit is really difficult. And even if you go out and you look at who was available, Aaron Gordon, you brought it up before we started podcasting, like maybe he is a better basketball player than Jay Crowder. Maybe he would help the Suns a lot more. I think we kind of might disagree on that, but how do you get Aaron Gordon, like contractually in a trade? Like, just there are so many things that go into this. I just don't. And even if they got Aaron Gordon, does that make him that much better? Like the Utah Jazz,
exactly,
moves, because the Utah Jazz don't have movable parts either, and also happen to be really good. So
yeah,
I think it's partially that. If someone came out and said, I'll trade you LeBron James for DeAndre Ayton, yeah, but that's not going to happen. So I don't know. It just seemed like a logical, that's why it happened. And you can be upset that they didn't do something, but if you can't name that something and give me a really good reason why two teams or three teams should do it, then I'm not going to sit here and complain about it, you know?
Let me say like hypothetically, Paul George was available.
Okay.
Should you talk about like Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges, two first round picks for him?
Yeah.
We should talk about it. Yeah. Because freaking Paul George, Devin Booker, and Chris Paul. Yeah. That's going to, and I know the salaries, and like you'd have to figure it out. Like it's not just those two guys. I'm not saying that's the offer, but I'm saying it's like the most valuable parts of an offer or something. You'd have to talk about it. That's what we're talking about with championship windows. The market dictated this too, Kevin. There just weren't any good guys available. I wrote this in kind of a moshed up sort of preview yesterday, because it's like, does Victor Oladipo, especially with the state of his game right now, move the needle that much to the point where you would give anything up significant? No.
He didn't even get, because his contract's up, so he's a rental. It's not something that you can really even pay that much for it.
Kevin, let's say you did Jay Crowder, Cam Johnson, Javon Carter, and a future second round pick for Aaron Gordon. I don't even know if that works like money wise, or if I think that's about right money wise, but if Orlando would even want to do that or whatever. What are the chances that makes the Suns better, would you say? Percentage?
I don't know.
40, 60?
Yeah, 40% chance that it makes
it's
them
just
better.
There weren't
that's a clunky piece to put in. Like Jay Crowder is an easier piece to insert in a team than Aaron Gordon, I think.
Kevin, we've been I guess concerned is a word that we can use in different ways, but I guess concerned about the play of DeAndre Ayton in the past month. Can I say 100% that they would be like 90% for sure better with DeAndre Ayton the rest of the season as opposed to Nikola Vucevic or whatever? Like, no, but would I, like, it would be a close discussion for me, just because stylistically I think if someone like Vucevic or Sabonis, these names that we were hearing about, was more of a guy that does what DeAndre does, because that's the thing, is that what DeAndre does on the basketball court stylistically is a pretty perfect fit for what they need. They need a guy who's a high-level defender, who's mobile, who can run basket to basket, rebound at a high level, and just be a finisher around the rim. And that's what they need him to be. And you look at these other guys, like it goes beyond just you'd need to give Vucevic the ball 20 times a game or whatever. It's just like stylistically to get the benefits out of them. So I'm not saying I wouldn't trade DeAndre Ayton for Nikola Vucevic. I'm just saying that it's a lot more complicated to do, especially at the deadline, because something I talked about on one of the shows this morning is if you make one of these trades right now at that level where you move DeAndre, you're essentially resetting. In my opinion, you're doing a lot of reset work. The Magic have a lot to figure out, Kevin. Boy, let me tell you. But the Nuggets are going to have a couple of weeks, Kevin, where they're going to need to iron this thing out. Like, I don't think anyone's expecting them to, like, go on a tear all of a sudden and win 14 out of 16 with Aaron Gordon. You know, they're going to have to figure that dynamic out. Even Portland grabbing someone like Norm Powell, who's pretty much just a better version of Gary Trent, so it's, like, not much of a stylistic change. They're still going to need to, like, Chicago's going to need to take some time, Kevin. That's what happens when you make these moves at the deadline with guys like this who aren't just, like, top 10, top 15 players in the league. You need a little bit of time. And that – you want to talk about moving from, like, DeAndre to someone like that. So I just – I didn't see any sort of realistic path, in my opinion, to them undoubtedly getting better while also not mortgaging their future, Kevin. That's what we're kind of dancing around here, is that you talk about giving up like a second round pick, 2 second round picks or whatever. It's different for these teams that can't look 4 or 5 years down the line and still see themselves potentially contending. Because if DeAndre gets back on his development path that he was on in his first 2 seasons in terms of improvement, and you've got Book committed long-term, again, you get him to re-up. That's a whole nother story. I don't even want to think about that right now. You're about to pay Mikal Bridges a whole lot of money. You have those three guys for the next 3-4 years. You've got winning to think about beyond that. You can't just mortgage everything right now on this year and next year. And they already kind of did, Kevin. They gave up some picks too. In that deal, they didn't give up absolutely everything by any means, but the Jalen Smith pick is one that was pretty important for them, because that was going to be one of their best assets kind of remaining before they started to turn into this winning team. Because like, if you hit on that, it's like such an added bonus for what projects to be a good to a very good team.
And they let him go to the G League and look bad. So now that's not even a trade asset as much anymore, because
that's another thing I'll be brief on, is that I think Jalen Smith was the most logical piece that they could move. But I don't even know how you talk about Jalen Smith with other teams right now. First of all, you drafted him somewhere where I would bet a good amount of teams did not have him. So that just throws the value off from the jump, because the Suns obviously valued him at a point where they thought he was worth it at number 10. I would guarantee that there's at least 10 teams who did not think that, probably more. So you're already there, and then you look at the way his season has started. I posted in my preview yesterday, Gavoni was like scathing on Smith and just how he looked in G League play. I personally watched, I want to say like his first 4 or 5 games. I didn't catch the back half, but I didn't think he was that bad. But Gavoni just like saw his flaws exposed and just thought that he wasn't really standing out amongst G League players, which you would want him to as a lottery pick down there. So that type of, and not to like bring up his like negatives and how he's underwhelmed this year or whatever, but how do you talk about that type of guy in like trade discussions and where his proper value is?
Right.
It's really difficult. Like Javon has 2 more years guaranteed after this. It's not just a 1 year commitment for a team to see how he looks in an audition. Like you have to have his money committed to you. The Suns are fine with that, as they should be, because of the culture driver that he's been, as Monty's put it. But those were like the two guys that made the most sense to trade. And to me, like there was question marks there on both in terms of like the value that other teams would see in them. So I don't know, Kevin. That's kind of where I'm at with everything that happened. So I didn't see the window everyone was talking about, I guess.
I just think there's always a window, but you can't just make things out of thin air. Like even if you've got DA off, you trade him because you're not sold on him and you get first round picks back. And even let's say they traded him, got some picks, got maybe a talented player in return who's, you know, a rotation guy, and signed Andre Drummond and LaMarcus Aldridge, like that's just going to set you back just as far as your continuity this year. It's not going to help your window. I just see no avenues where you can magically create this team that's even better than they are now. And I think that's, at the end of the day, what's important. And the other thing that's important, like we talked about the Jazz, like I think when you look at the Spurs right now, who are in the playoff picture, despite LaMarcus not playing, despite, you know, they've kind of been off the radar for some reason. Continuity is a huge thing. And if you play in a system and that system is what you build your culture around, you never know. Like I said, if the Clippers continue stumbling, if the Nuggets can't figure out how Aaron Gordon fits, if the Lakers aren't healthy, then suddenly, like, who's to say this isn't the year? Not that I think that's going to happen, but, and not that I think that your concerns about this team being young still and inexperienced without playoffs in the past decade, like, that matters. But I just think you can't just say that you're out of it, and you can't say you're out of it right now without making a panic move.
Yeah, it's cool to see the fan base really be engaged in terms of, like, really wanting the team to do something and improve the roster. There's something very just cool about that, I guess. And I say this wholeheartedly. Like, someone just tweeted me and said, Jabari Parker, like, is he an upgrade over Abdul Nader? And it's like, that's kind of what I was talking about before in terms of, like, Western Conference Finals and, like, Western Conference. Is Jabari Parker going to play in the playoffs? It's like, is Abdul Nader going to really play in the playoffs that much? It's one of those things where it's cool to have this, like, desire for them to make moves and upgrade the team, but you got to think about how they're actually really, if you're really upgrading the teams or you're just making a move for the sake of, like, making moves. And there definitely is an urgency in terms of, I think that in terms of the window of this team, I think it's been a whole lot different of a discussion the past week and a half because of what happened with the Lakers. I don't know if we talked about that last week or if it was even there yet, but LeBron has a high ankle sprain. 4 to 6 weeks, I think, was what Shams was saying today. There's a decent chance that they lose enough now without those two guys to the point where they're kind of in play-in territory, which, I mean, they're the Lakers. I'm not really going to think that there's a chance of them getting, like, eliminated in that situation, but it's obviously not where you want to be, and it puts them down outside of home court and things like that. I think that's going to change here with, like, the vaccination starting to come up more. We'll probably see more of a home court advantage in the playoffs than we've seen in the regular season. But I still think that there's, like, a clear divide right now where it's, like, the Lakers up top. And then there's a second tier, though, which is why I'm talking about this, because I think that there's just the second tier where who is, like, the second best team in the West. I think a lot of people would say Utah right now with the way that they've played in the regular season. But I think that there's an argument there for just about any of those 4 to 5 teams, and that's including the Suns. You've got Utah, Phoenix, the Clippers, the Nuggets, and I think that's probably as far as you would go. Portland's defense has just been too terrible this year. They still have a negative point differential, Kevin, and they're 25-18 because Dame's just absolutely nuts in the clutch right now. Dallas 23-19. But that second tier, I was tweeting with Mike Vigil of the Timeline podcast, and we were talking about, he was, like, saying how the Gordon move is, like, the exact kind of move he was afraid of, and it's spot on because you look at those teams that I mentioned. The Nuggets go get Aaron Gordon and JaVale McGee. They got better today, no question. Portland got better to a slight extent, I would say. Norman Powell, and like I can't say this without my own opinion, but the consensus from Raptors people and reading stuff is that he's not quite an impact defender, which surprises me and you, Kevin, because we watched him in college and he was a monster. He wreaked havoc. But they get him in for Gary Trent, Rodney Hood, and just with the scoring and the shooting that Powell's provided this year. He's averaging 20 points a game this year, Kevin, shooting like 43% from three on over 6 attempts a game. He's been a killer for Toronto. So they get that third guy to go next to CJ and Dame, but to like speak to Mikkel's value, guys like Mikkel are so hard to find that you'll just take 6'3 Norm Powell with long arms just to be that third guy out there with the guard. So it's an upgrade for them. That's like a really interesting thing. I think you wrote about it, that like, if you see a Portland series, Powell is probably the guy that guards book. So that's pretty interesting. Dallas added JJ Redick, which is obviously like a good move. I think people are, Kevin, me and you have experienced this too much. But Bledsoe is the prime example of, he looked like he was like just not the player he was in Phoenix, and turns out all he needed to do was get in a new situation. Then he makes a couple of defense teams with Milwaukee. I think JJ Redick's going to be just fine in Dallas and get back to the player that he was, at least part of it for sure. And be more of an impact guy.
Yeah.
Is there a team that stands out there in terms of the moves that were made? I didn't even bring up the Clippers, who I think got worse. I don't know what that Rondo trade was.
I have no idea what that was either. I mean, on Portland, I'm curious because it was 2-for-1, and you lose, like, Rodney Hood's a decent wing. And I guess I don't know if he's not been great this year or whatever, but I'm a huge Gary Trent guy. So I was kind of surprised, and I almost wrote something like, I mean, my head was spinning this morning, but I almost wrote like, this is a dumb trade. Like, why would you trade 2-for-1? But Norm Powell is playing really well this year, shooting really well. So that's going to be an interesting to see how that goes. But I just think the Nuggets is an obvious one for them. That's going to be super interesting because I really, it could go either way where Gordon, like we watched him in college, he didn't have to be the guy dribbling all the time and taking a lot of shots. He's plenty good, and I think he's going to be, you know, optimized as a player who just makes the right pass, can hit an occasional three, can dribble and make plays for his teammates. I think he'll be a good fit as long as he can just snap back to like his college days. But yeah, I don't know. That's fascinating because they haven't been playing super great as a team, even though Jokic has just been insane this year.
Yeah. It's funny. I don't even know if we should talk about the games really, but the timing of what I wrote about and then what we just kind of talked about with the Orlando game, Mikkel gets that corner three opportunity with 90 seconds left, team down one, misses and really close. And then EJ, nail on the head, is just like, yeah, you could tell he wanted no part of that shot. And Mikkel has stretches where he's confident shooting the ball, has stretches where he's not. It's been about 85-15 towards ultimate confidence this year, which has been awesome to see. And he's been great, obviously. But he's just going through one of those little funks he has every couple of games. But again, like close game against the Magic on a Wednesday in the regular season. And then DeAndre has that moment where the inbounds play falls apart. He gets it. He has absolutely no idea to do, which he shouldn't. That's like never a spot he's probably been in before. I mean, we watch all his games, Kevin. I can't remember of a situation where the ball wound up in his hands with 5 seconds left to make a pass to someone.
I was scared for him. Like
me too. Yeah, it was not a fair. And I think that's what EJ was saying, is like, you just can't pass to DeAndre there because it's like, it's not fair to expect him to actually know what to do there.
Well, Jay Crowder also panicked to pass it to him.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's something that I've been talking about with the team, is that they're now 10-11 in games in the clutch. I think that it's fine, and it's something that's going to get better. But with that being said, there's undoubtedly a lack of crisp execution and crunch time in the offense. Even through all these wins, their plus minus in the clutch, Kevin, is still negative right now. They had an awful start to the season, and part of their after the 8-8 run, that was something that I wrote about, was Chris Paul's teams in the clutch have been amazing. This is going to go up, and it did go up. They got back to about even, but they haven't kept going up in the past couple of weeks. They've sort of plateaued, if that's the right way to put it. So It's funny to bring that up in this, but to go back to like that second tier of the West, I think that's where the hope is for the most part, is that you can compete obviously with any team in the West when they have the backcourt that they do, but you can really not even convince, like that's too aggressive of a way to put it, but you could solidly pick the Suns to beat really any of those teams. We'll see how Denver like flows with the Gordon. Obviously, if Gordon kind of accepts like the right kind of role and he's fine being more of, as Zach Lowe always puts it, like if he wants to be more Draymond than Kevin Durant, then he could really change his career in a lot of ways. Matt Moore was kind of tweeting the same stuff. I don't know. It's interesting, Kevin. I guess to kind of close, would you, to bounce the question off of the trades, what team are you the second most scared of in the West right now after the deadline, would you say? Because I think we can agree the Lakers are number one.
I mean, the Jazz. Can I say the Jazz?
You can say the Jazz. I'm not going to say the Jazz, but you can say the Jazz.
I'm going to say the Jazz. I mean, I think that it matters that they're playing well right now, a lot more than the Suns, just because they have playoff experience. And I think they just want to get to the postseason. And it's good news if you're playing well. And when you get to the postseason, you think you're going to take it to another level.
Yeah, number three in defense right now, number four in offense on threes. They are shooting at 39.7%, which is second in the league. The only reason I don't say Utah is I think just watching the way their regular season has unfolded, and this is a crazy hot take that I haven't really said anywhere until now, but
ooh.
I'm not really buying the whole blowout thing, Kevin. I don't care that they're blowing out a bunch of teams in the regular season, which is a crazy thing to say because they're just smoking teams. But it's kind of like what I was just talking about with the Suns, where like I want to see them in more close competitive games, because Mitchell's I've been meaning to look this up, and I'm going to right now, but Mitchell's numbers in the clutch this year have not been good, and he's their guy. They do not have like a – you're not running a set for Bojan, you know what I'm saying? Like they – the Suns have two guys, and I would much rather take Chris Paul or Devin Booker in the clutch over Mitchell, no question. The thing is, they have the defense, they have the ball movement, they have the offensive fluidity to kind of run through it, but at the end of the day, it does come down to we're switching this. This guy has the ball with 12 seconds left, and he has to go make a play, and that's going to be Mitchell most of the time. Now, the thing is, to go back to your point, Kevin, in playoff experience, Mitchell's been incredible in the postseason in his career. He always steps up in that, and I think that would be where I would hesitate to, with the point that I'm making right now. And I think that it's somewhere along the lines of just not really being too afraid of that guy specifically, if I had to, I guess, put it that way. I'm not sure. I'm trying to find the numbers right now as I go, because he's not even okay. So he's shooting 34% in the clutch right now. He's taken 41 shots. They've only played, he's only played 43 total minutes in the clutch, because again, they are just killing teams. Like they're just out there just doing it. So last year he took the most shots in the clutch of anyone. He took 105 and he shot 42% on them. So that's a decent number. It's better than what he's at this year. And then the year before that, he shot 35%. I think that was only like his second year in the league, though. So maybe that's not fair. But that's kind of like my whole Utah thing, is that I'm still probably going to put Denver ahead of them.
That's fair, yeah.
I just think Jokic is that awesome. And I think that their supplementary pieces are pretty good. I think Michael Porter Jr. to me is like the classic – like he gets hot in a couple of games in a series, you just can't win that series against them. It's just this like extra factor that you can't handle. And the Suns kind of have that too with either Mikal or DeAndre, in my opinion, where if you play the Suns and DeAndre's rolling or Mikal's rolling offensively and just putting up like 20 points a game, or DeAndre's kind of like the same way, where if you get like that Miami game DeAndre for a couple of games, that's going to be tough for any team to really beat them. But I guess I would say Denver, but the fact that I don't have an immediate answer, Kevin, speaks to kind of how wide open it is. But I also think that Portland, even Dallas, are really not that far off. And just because of experience, Golden State, I'm not automatically saying Suns in four, Suns in five over Golden State, which is kind of crazy to say because of how mediocre they've been and bad at times, but the experience thing is what I keep coming back to. for sure.
Yeah, I think it's just looking at it, I think Jazz, Lakers, Nuggets are kind of the scary ones for me.
Clippers have been like average in the past like month. That's why we're not bringing them up right now. They're not playing good basketball right now.
Yeah, I go back and forth with Portland. Dame time and playoffs, yeah. I guess I have to put Portland there.
It's kind of a weird discussion with them because you have to say, well, if so-and-so is healthy.
Right.
We haven't seen them enough with CJ and Nurkic healthy. They're getting Nurkic back Friday. He broke the news himself. And I think CJ's right around the corner. Is CJ come back yet, actually?
Yeah, he came back. I actually don't know when he came back, but he played like 2 nights ago.
Okay. Good to see. We love watching CJ. All right. I mean, that's really it. Yeah. I just kind of wanted to have like an open discussion about like expectations for the teams that I certainly, do not want to be a party pooper and believe that they have a very good chance of making the Western Conference Finals because of what we talked about. And I think that they have a decent chance and with whoever they meet there, just because of those two guys that they have, because there's no team out West that can match them in terms of ball handler creation. It's just not there. Brooklyn's the only other team in the league that can, because they've got three of those guys and the Suns only have two, and two of them are former MVPs. And then the other one's Kyrie Irving, who's not too shabby either, but that stuff goes a long way in a postseason, man. The sport can be super complex sometimes, Kevin, and you're talking about very complex matchups and things like that and switching strategies and all these concepts that go down. But I mean, if those two dudes are playing at a super high level, they can beat anyone, and it can be pretty simple like that. They could just make a run to the finals if those two guys are cooking.
Yeah. And I don't remember if we talked about it, but your column about just the precedent of having a starting lineup where there are three guys who are just so young without playoff experience, and Book, Mikal, and DA. There's not much history there, and
it's happened once.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much that matters at the end of the day. I think it does. It's going to be the reason they get knocked out, whether that's the first round or the conference finals or whatever. But I do think that's why when we talk about the window and the expectations, it is really just like, okay, let's – John Bloom got all hot about it today on your guys' roundtable, but just enjoy the basketball team that plays really well during the regular season, and then we'll see, because I think – this is a process for those guys, and this team is going to go as the young guys go more than Chris Paul. Obviously they need Chris Paul, and that's to me where the window might be shut, is if he starts declining or whatever. But I think that's looking too far down the road isn't healthy at this point. Like, if you're a Suns fan, this team has been out of the playoffs over a decade. So
yeah, I know like the tone is mostly going to come across as like as negative for this episode more so than others, but do not mistake it for me not enjoying what's going on right now. And I've been like telling a couple of different people the past couple of weeks, like, even if this team gets knocked out in the first round, there is a level of, and this is not to like set the expectations this low for the team, they're not there. Like, it's going to be disappointing for sure. But am I just going to be roasting the team and saying how terrible it is and all that kind of stuff? No.
Fire
Monty, all that kind of stuff that would come up should they bring back Chris Paul again because he can't win in the playoffs or like whatever would come of that in the first round. I would never get there to that point of criticism. I think like in 95% of outcomes where they could potentially lose in the first round or whatever, just because of where the expectations are at with the team and just being, in my opinion, back to what I wrote about, because that was something that we had been talking about for the past couple of months. I just wanted to look for precedent, and there just wasn't any. There was a weird year where Boston in 2002 made the Eastern Conference Finals with Antoine Walker, Paul Pierce, and Tony Batiste starting, who were all in their first postseason, who were all 25 years old or younger. And the team that they actually came across was the New Jersey Nets, who the year before would have qualified if Richard Jefferson was starting. I believe it was Richard Jefferson, Jason Collins, and Kenyon Martin were the three young starters that they had, 25 years old or younger, the year before. And that was the second postseason for RJ and Collins, because they had made their debut before with RJ coming off the bench, and then Kenyon Martin second. So there just really isn't any precedent for it. And like, you can correct me here if I'm wrong, Kevin, to like wrap up this discussion before we go, but it's just kind of a known thing being a basketball fan, right? Like, I brought up the Steph Curry example when he was in his first postseason against the Spurs, but there's I forget the way Bickley put it earlier today, but there's like a rite of passage kind of thing, earn your stripes kind of deal for the first go. And I remember when the Celtics made it with Tatum and Brown that first year when they were a lower seed, everyone was just talking about how important it was for those guys to get a taste of playoff basketball. And I think I would feel much differently about this team if they would have actually if they would have made the play-in last year, gotten to the series against the Lakers, and then lost in four or five games or whatever. I think I actually would still feel pretty differently about the team because they got that taste.
Yeah, I agree. I think that matters a lot. Although, like, I'm trying to think, first 7 seconds or less team, there were a lot of young guys on that team.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if Q Rich probably didn't have playoff experience. He went through that one, right?
And he did not. Yeah, I had it in there. He was in his first – or in his first – I think Stat was in his second because he got a year with Marbury, the year when Marbury hit the shot in San Antonio.
He was also really good at first. Yeah. Amari Stoudemire was fine his first playoff run.
Yeah, he was really good. Yeah, so, I mean, and that's the thing. It's like it's – what I talked about in there and kind of widening the search results or whatever to kind of whittle it down and try and find a better example, because they have Chris Paul, which is a huge differentiating factor, and they're just not a team led solely by young guys. Book is in his sixth NBA season. And I think that just like his mentality and like how much of it just flat out baller that he is kind of would not lead you to surprise. It would not surprise you if he had the kind of run we've seen from Mitchell and Murray the past couple of years, where he comes in, just lights it on fire right away. And then Mikal is just someone who's going to provide winning plays for you no matter what. Now, is he going to be a guy who can step up and really just provide that scoring that I talked about that can swing a series? I'm not sure. But then like DeAndre is obviously the X factor. And I think that's something I didn't intentionally do this, but just danced around the whole time we were talking. I just can't confidently look at them as a title contender with someone that inconsistent that they're relying on enough.
Yeah. And again, I think the clutch issues are going to be something that we have to watch now. Being even, I think you said like 11 and 10 in those games.
10 and 11, they're like -9 in plus minus. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's not terrible at all. But I think a lot of those, the positives in that are lots of Book and Chris Paul pick and roll stuff or one-on-one stuff when they just try to take over. And it's going to be in a playoff series. I think that's going to be really interesting to see if, you know, when you get out of your sets and the defenses kind of slog late in games, if you remember like Steve Nash and Amari would just, you know, just pick and roll every time, like, can the Suns be that efficient with those two guys doing that? To get them wins in close games. I think that's going to be something, again, where we're not going to get a feel for that unless they have more close games here for the next few months.
Yeah, it can extend to the postseason too, Kevin. I don't want to like start getting our fingerprints and like stepping into discussions we're going to have like before the playoffs start. But let's say they draw like Portland first round. They win emphatically first game at home, second game, close game late. They just shut it down. Like Chris Paul just shuts the game down. Booker shuts it down. They defend well, whatever. Game 3, Portland wins first one at home. Game 4, same thing. They shut it down again in the clutch, which again, like I'm saying that it just doesn't sound unrealistic. If you like build your stripes for that early in the postseason too, I think it will dictate a lot of it for me is going to dictate how they look in those moments for the first game or two. Like if they just are cool as ice, you know, in the first couple of playoff instances they get for it, then that can like just dramatically change the way, because obviously like the teams get better, the basketball gets better the deeper you go in. But if you establish that kind of rhythm early, but what I ended the recap with after the Orlando loss was just, if I was the Suns, I would be hoping for more games like that, like the Orlando game, because it's not adamantly clear that they need to iron these things out. It's not a must, but it would help them for sure. And that's something you've talked about a lot, right?
Yeah. I think beyond us, or us two are not complaining about Monty's play calling, but I think Monty wants to have those moments where he has to coach them late game situations, whether it's just knowing what to do, knowing, you know, whether they're going to run a play from him or whether they're going to just press on and Chris Paul calls something, like that kind of stuff, I think matters a lot, especially for a guy like Chris, who's kind of still new. And even though he knows Monty well, he doesn't know his teammates that well. So I think they can get a lot out of those games.
I'm having deja vu. We had this type of episode like a year or two ago. I don't know if you can remember it off the top of your head, where we just had like a reality check, kind of just setting what our expectations were for the rest of the season or whatever, or just gauging where they were. This like inspired me to think of putting up a poll and just seeing what people's expectations are going to be for the playoffs, like right this second, like what's an acceptable playoff outcome to you right now. I just wonder how many people are at win two playoff series or above, you know, because it feels like the majority is at win two playoff series or above. Like if they don't make it to the Western Conference Finals, then the season was not a success.
Yeah.
That's kind of where it feels like. And I might be wrong, but it was a fun discussion, Kev, to have anyway, and kind of just get straight and center with it, and kind of just where we're at with the team. They've got this stretch, Kevin, we talked about a couple episodes ago, where coming out of the break, like they've got a chance to maintain ground. They are 5-3 since the break. Losses to Indiana, Minnesota, Orlando. They've got Toronto tomorrow. It's not clear if they're going to have Gary Trent Jr. And I think Rodney Hood's out right now, I believe. But then they've got Charlotte a couple of days later there. I think they added Wanamaker, I want to say. But they didn't really do anything that much. Atlanta, who made the Lou Will acquisition. And then a fun one on Wednesday in Phoenix with Chicago in town, adding Vucevic. Oklahoma City, Houston. And the reason I'm rattling off these six games is because that sounds like pretty light. And then you go Utah, LA, Washington, Houston, but then Miami, Sacramento, San Antonio, Milwaukee, Philly, Boston, Brooklyn. And that's the April stretch that gets pretty brutal here. So I really do think we're going to see those types of games we were talking about. And it's going to be exciting to see. You ready for 10 a.m. basketball on Sunday?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to an 8:30 a.m. Zoom with Monty from Charlotte. Yikes. Getting us ready for football season, I guess, though, right? Like
I can't tell. The calendar is so messed up with the sports. Like we have like three games some nights upcoming here where the sports are all happening, and it's too much.
Isn't it fun when you draft a center in the third round and you just talk about how he's like a future starter and the great value you got for him taking him in the third round, and then 2 years later do you trade him for a sixth round pick? No. He's just versatile. He can play anywhere. Even if he doesn't work out at center, he'll be like a fine guard.
I thought he'd be a guard, yeah.
Well, maybe he is, but not in the NFL, Kevin. There's our Cardinals talk. We'll keep it shorter this time for this episode. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back next time. Bye!